Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
We continue our discussions. We've been focusing a lot on the issue of crime. And recently, there was a statement issued on the matter by Mayaro MP Rushton Parry. He joins us on the phone now. Let's see if we have the MP with us. MP, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to your listeners.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. We've been discussing the issue of crime for as long as anyone can remember. And we had a crime symposium with CARICOM leaders here. Several comments made since then. In the newspaper this morning, our Minister of National Security saying that we don't need more laws to deal with things like home invasions. You issued a statement recently where it was headlined, Urgent Call for Change in Leadership at the Ministry of National Security. Now, it's not the first time we've heard this. What exactly did you mean?
Well, Satish, at the end of the day, for the last, 10, 15 years, we are throwing more and more money at the Ministry of National Security. Under this administration, they've had about 3 ministers, and there have been no let down in the spate of murders and other serious crimes. Look today, as I browse through the media review, the allocations, we are sending another $128 million to the Ministry of National Security, of which $76 million, which is about half, goes to the SSA. Now, I'm wondering, we are putting all this money on tools, on equipment, on software, on CCTV cameras, and the murders keep happening. Look, I think last night we added another 6 murders to the counter. Now, I can tell you, in any organization, as a businessman, when a business fails, you don't blame the employees. You blame management, because management controls the levers to change direction, to change strategy. And clearly, under Minister Hines, he has brought no change. He has not inspired the men and women below him to do better. So, we can't keep doing the same things over and over and over, expect a different result. When you even listen to the utterances of the Honorable Minister, when he says that it is not his job to provide a safe environment as you work at the police. But listen, when you are a policy director, the buck stops with you. So if these things are not working, you need to intervene. And at the end of the day, he sits on a National Security Council. The Prime Minister is the head of that council. And when you have a failure of these organs, they all should take the blame. But at the end of the day, my call for the removal of the Minister of National Security is not unique. It isn't coming from the United National Congress alone. It is coming from right throughout society at this time, Satish.
When the Prime Minister spoke at the CARICOM summit on crime, the regional discussions that we had here at the Hyatt Hotel, he dealt specifically with this issue of the call for the removal of the Minister of National Security. And he went on to juxtapose what happened during the People's Partnership with 5 ministers of national security in 5 years, and him having three in 7 years, or how many ever years it is. And he made the statement that changing a Minister of National Security did not bring in all those instances the kind of response, results, that persons thought it would. Do you agree with the Prime Minister's statement that moving the Minister of National Security over all those years brought no results?
Absolutely not. This man is an entrepreneur. If my leadership team is not functioning, I am not getting the results in my business. I change the leaders of the organization. Remember, leadership is not only about providing money. In government service, a policy director is a man who decides, how to provide the resources for the various arms of national security. But there's also a psychological component to leadership. You must inspire people. You must inspire the men that you lead to do better. And unfortunately, Minister Hines doesn't do that. And now to pick and say that because under the partnership there were 5 ministers. Well, if all of them fail, what are you saying? You should leave your failure as well? That is the most nonsensical reason in any organization. If you don't try to change your heads to create directional change, then I mean we are approaching, we are at the end of April, beginning of May, we've crossed 200 murders. I mean, that is the barometer in terms of managing crime in this country. And ministers of government and leaders, your presence, your persona, your language, all of those things interfere and interact with how people perceive, how they will do their job. And I mean, okay, you had different commissioners of police. You have to give Jack his jacket. When Commissioner Gary Griffith was there, there was a different tone. There was a different language. I mean, with the greatest respect to Commissioner Earla Hayward, I mean, she's new. She's in a month or two into the role. But at the end of the day, she has been given a very tough job to do. And if the arm that she's depending on, which is the Minister of National Security, is weak and is weak in his leadership, she's really, really been given a very difficult task with a short straw. And I mean, I continue wishing all the best. I keep wishing the TTPS the best in the circumstances that they are left to deal with. But it's really a weak excuse to say, because the partnership had five, I must leave my one, who is doing absolutely nothing to inspire the men below him.
We've on the issue of crime, apart from the complaints that people are making, there are persons who are putting forward suggestions. There are others who are saying that the failure to arrest the situation is not just resulting in victims of crime, but there are some domino effects. And businesses are feeling the real pinch of that, because persons are unwilling to go out and venture into some places to spend. And apart from that, persons, their businesses are suffering in more ways than one. As a businessman, what are some of the challenges confronting businesses now as a result of the crime situation?
Well, Satish, you know the portfolio that I cover in the parliament is trade and industry, basically small and micro enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
Small and micro enterprises are reeling at this time, because understand this, small and micro enterprises have less resources in terms of the ability to protect themselves, to secure their business premises, CCTV cameras, armed security. When you find these challenges that are happening in communities, SMEs are closing earlier. Some of them are closing up shop. The ones who are the victims of crime and break-ins and burglaries, it's very difficult to come back on. And every business closed, you send home five employees, six employees. That's five or six families that ends on the breadline. Another big issue that we don't seem to understand as well, SMEs being affected by crime in rural communities, these are the businesses that support the local community NGOs, the sports clubs, the all-force clubs, you know, that strengthens communities. And when these SMEs collapse under the pressure of crime, we are destroying the fabric of our rural communities as well. So we're just piling on the stress and strain on communities. Let's flip a little bit, just one second, to the issue of foreign direct investment. When you have Trinidad and Tobago listed as the six most dangerous places in the world, which foreign company wants to come and invest money in Trinidad, bring their experts and their families to Trinidad? They're not going to do that. When our judiciary is in a state of collapse, when we can send police officers to Barbados to pick up a man and fly him back, literally kidnap him according to the judge, which foreign company wants to come here and expose themselves to that kind of nonsense? So that is what is killing us today.
Let's look at some of the suggestions, because I know that you've been making numerous when it comes to fighting crime. You've been working with your community, you've been working with the police officials in your district and so on to get a handle on the situation. Tell us some of what you've been able to put in place, some of the discussions that you've been having.
So I have been able over the last couple of years to work very, very closely with all our public agencies here in Mara, from health, police, you know, banking, finance, our agricultural sector. Over the last couple of years, through assistance with the United States Embassy, this U.S. Southern Command, we were able to bring a lot of training to our officers here in Eastern Division. Well, you know, nothing happens without the permission of the Eastern Division commanders. We don't do anything on our own. I don't make a suggestion on my own. I would reach out to the divisional commanders. And so, look, we are getting this third party to provide some training, and we've been very successful. And one of the things why Eastern Division has such a good record, we do have a lot of our young officers, our officers live in the community. So that helps as well. You know, they have an interest in the community that they live, so they pay a little more particular attention. Just very recently, you would have seen that I had the deputy chief of mission of the U.S. Embassy. He was back here in Mayaro, and I had him meet with seniors of the TTPS Eastern Division to discuss further training opportunities in things like cybercrime, crowd control, riot control, how they deal with domestic violence and so on in terms from a psychological perspective. So all of these things, they help motivate our officers. They help create a different environment for them. And again, because our officers, many of them live in the communities, we tend to get a better response in terms of how they deal with the issues of managing crime within the constituency. So I'm very proud for that, and I commend them for that as well.
Apart from the obvious, victims of crime and the losses that may be sustained by businesses and everything else, and in the statement that you issued, you spoke about something else. The mental and emotional toll that it's taking on individuals, families, and communities. I think when we speak about crime, we seldom often focus on this element, which is long-lasting. Being a victim of crime, there are people who are traumatized for years after the act. What's going on in your community?
We have had quite a bit of those types of break-ins. Just recently, we had a couple assault and battery when people break in people's homes and so on. Now, I can tell you, as a victim myself of having our offices broken into quite a couple times, when you go into an office or your home that has been burglarized, it feels dirty. Mm-hmm. It feels sickening. And you get this sense of, you know, that you don't want to be inside it because your home is your fortress, Satish. And when that is violated, there's a sense of dirtiness that you feel, that you don't want to go there. And when you have people of very low means, less means, who may not have the financial capability to rebound quickly, and they have to go without, you know, things that they would have lost, things that would have been stolen. Mm. You have families where people got beaten up. How do you recover psychologically from those things? And you're right. You know, besides the victims, the immediate victims, their families are impacted. The neighborhood is impacted at the end of the day. People may choose not to go out to a restaurant, or they may choose not to go to a birthday party, to a ramayana, prayers in the evening. All these things are just adding more pressure psychologically to people, to the citizenry. So crime really is a nexus for a number of mental health, you know, psychological issues, financial issues, you know, and we have to get a hold on this right away. We don't have time to waste.
Yeah. It's interesting. This was raised on the program last week. I did not know that there was actually a clinical name for a psychological term for what you expressed here. It's called sclerophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And we were having the discussion, we were joking about it and saying, well, the whole country is suffering from this thing because everybody's scared of burglars and robberies and criminals and that kind of thing. MP, I'm sure that we will not end our discussion because we are ending our conversation today, because there's so much more to discuss. But before we go, I just wanted to pick your brain a bit. I saw as well that you issued a statement related to our finances and some of what our finance minister had to say on Friday. Just remind some of our listeners, because we were speaking about increases to the budgetary allocations and some of the things that stood out to you. Tell us about some of those.
So basically, the 2022-23 budget allocation was $58 billion, I think, somewhere around there. And on Friday, the Standing Finance Committee will meet to approve another $3.8 billion TT dollars. That's going to push us closer to $62 billion in the budget. Now, I maintain this position. We are spending all this money, but we are not seeing improvement in anything. Our road network is collapsing. Our health system is collapsing. Well, crime is out of control. You still have half of the country having water issues. So where is this money being spent? And when you look at businesses are still owed $7.8 billion in VAT refunds. What is VAT refunds? VAT refunds is working capital that businesses would use to buy machine, equipment, add a new wing to a building, you know, create a new business enterprise, create more jobs. And when the government holds that VAT, you are stifling businesses again. And there's something called the multiplier effect of money, Satish. When you hold on to $8 billion of VAT money, that is about $24 billion in money power that is out of circulation from the national economy. So clearly the economics of Imbert and Dr. Rowley really leaves a lot to be desired. And I mean, if you tune in on Friday at the Standing Finance, you will see the areas that they are asking for more money on. I mean, I want to know, you want $15 or $20 million to pay more on rent. So for the entire year, you don't know you had to pay that rent. But what Imbert does, to keep the budget under $60 billion, where he can boast of small deficits, he purposely underfunds certain things in the budget. So when you come at the media review, he adds on, he varies and so on. He moves money from the IDF into recurrent expenditure and so on. So he really tries to shade what he's doing by hiding actions in the media review. And I mean, he blamed the partnership for $60 billion budget. But look where we are. And another interesting thing that I noticed, we have seen a reduction in gas and oil prices for the last 12 months, right? Let's say from June last year to March this year. Would you believe that the government is asking for $600 million more to add to the fuel subsidy? So something is wrong. If we have seen a slide in the purchase, the world market price for oil and gas for a whole year, why are you coming and ask for $600 million more for the fuel subsidy? Something doesn't make sense there, and we're going to get to the bottom of that on Friday. So it's a huge issue coming. I know we don't have time to go into too many details on that, but it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds on Friday.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll have the discussion subsequent when the information is made public. And I know that you'll be perusing, but some pretty interesting things that you're pointing out, the allocations, the increase. We'll discuss that and so much more moving forward and positive. MP, thank you so much for being with us here this morning and sharing your comments. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, Mayara, MP Rushton Parry, speaking about the crime situation and how it's impacting not just the victims, but persons in the wider community, businesses, and et cetera.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.